Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Beth and Jeff McCord. Enneagram coaches.
Okay, so welcome to Dadville, everybody. This is a really fun episode. I'm gonna come in hot here, and I'm not gonna speak for John, but I'll try to. I feel like this is one of those episodes we've been really excited about. This has been planned for a while, and it was all about when we recorded and when we dropped this knowledge on y'all. This is our sort of Enneagram episode of Dadville. And I want to say a couple things to sort of set this up. We have two pros, and that's with capital P's. They're a power Enneagram couple, Tennessee. This is fun because I've known the McCords for a while, and I love what you guys – I've told y'all this a million times, but I love what you are doing. I think the Enneagram has been such a huge helpful thing to me and my wife, and a lot of my friends are now sort of versed in it, and we all know about it, and it's been hugely helpful, you know. And so, but it's a tricky thing, and you guys can speak to this here in a minute after I do this wonderful intro. But it's also a tricky thing because I think anything that kind of holds the power this sort of personality typing does can get really slippery really quickly. And so, you know, I felt like, you know, about a decade ago when I got into it, I felt like nobody really knew about it. I had a friend who is now a teacher get me into it. And it was hugely helpful. And so immediately I was just kind of obsessed with it. And then, you know, fast forward about 5 or 6 years, it felt like everybody knew about it. And then there was that feeling that I started to get in conversations where it started to get weird because, you know, people, it felt like witchcraft, mm-hmm. you know, yep. like people sure. were kind of like, what number are you? You know, and I was yes. like, well, first of all, my name's Dave.
right.
You know, and so there is sort of a tricky thing to it that I, you know, I'm excited to hear you guys speak to. But that said, I think it is such an incredible and helpful tool for, you know, knowing yourself, knowing sort of your shadow self, your struggles, but also just for relationships and marriage and how do you relate to your wife and your, you know, husband and kids and all those things. So I'm super excited about this episode, like super duper, duper, duper excited. And I want to intro y'all. I want to let the people know a little about y'all. So I'll do you one by one. So we'll start with beautiful Beth, best-selling author, speaker, and coach. Beth McCord is the founder and lead content creator of Your Enneagram Coach, a community designed to be a safe place for individuals to explore the Enneagram. With years of experience and passion for coming alongside individuals, couples, and groups, Beth is leading the way in simplifying the deep truths of the Enneagram from a biblical perspective, which is a big deal. Her mission is to make personal awareness and growth accessible for everyone, anywhere, so they can experience health and transformation in every area of their lives. Husband Jeff, you are smiling so big in this photo. It makes me so happy. Your seven wing is just killing it in this picture. Jeff, Pastor Jeff.
I have a name
Jeff,
for my seven wing, by the way.
What is it?
El McCordo.
Gosh, I would watch that. That sounds like an amazing Netflix kids cartoon.
Sure.
You know?
It was a sub-character in Nacho Libre.
Oh, that's why. I knew it. I was like, why does this feel so... one of the things I think is fascinating, too, that we'll talk about with you, Jeff, is you're also a pastor and have been, and it says here, has led and served several churches and organizations for more than 20 years. He has a master's of divinity, as well as multiple certifications in pastoral counseling, family and church mediations, and gospel coaching. The Enneagram transformed Jeff's life, family, and ministry, leading him to co-found Your Enneagram Coach with his wife, Beth. So, and you guys have books, which is really cool, Becoming Us, which is awesome. It says using the Enneagram to create a thriving gospel-centered marriage. It's such a great book. And then two, and I love this, these workbooks, Accelerate Your Personal Growth and Spiritual Renewal with the Enneagram Collection, which is the Enneagram Journal Collection for 21 daily readings, sort of according to your type. So obviously you guys have done this. You are you're in the midst of putting out content, content, which is so thankful. So can you guys kind of tell us and everybody else, you know, what sort of got you into the Enneagram, how you guys think about it, and why it's been such a powerful thing for you guys to sort of base your life around teaching.
Yeah. But it is fun. Just this last weekend, we dropped our son off. He just graduated from Tennessee Tech, and now he's starting basic Greek at Covenant Theological Seminary.
Oh, wow. It's almost like, like you were going to say basic camp or what's it called?
I thought I was like, oh, he's going to the Army.
It kind of is, though.
It's exciting.
But that's where we heard about the Enneagram for the first time. Was
2001. Mm-hmm.
That's right. We had to keep it quiet because, you know, in the Reformed Presbyterian world,
you could imagine
if Calvin or Luther didn't come up with a personality tool, it's not valid.
Well, and there was only one book that was quote unquote Christian in it. And even that, like the cover of it looked really sketchy. You know,
And like, the star or whatever on the phone.
But in all honesty, we were about 26 years old. We already had two kids. We got married at 20. And even though we were best friends, we kept hitting roadblocks and turbulence and everything in between. And we just couldn't understand why. So our friends introduced us to that book. Jeff, you know, having tons of other things that he was supposed to be reading, you know, skimmed it over and thought was interesting. But I devoured it. And I found out pretty quickly I'm a type 9. And as type nines, we have this big internal fog inside. So that was really a big reason why we were getting tripped up a lot is, you know, he as a type six would want security and honesty up front and kind of dive into any issues so that we could repair and restore so that there's security. That's what the sixes need. For me, I'm like, I'm great. Like, I don't know what's wrong. or he's like, what's going on? I don't know. You know? So this just gave me that vocabulary to be able to speak to him in ways like, oh, this is what's going on. And so just, it gave the clarity that we couldn't get to on our own or even through counseling. Cause at that time we'd already been to counseling. It just gave that clarity in the words that we needed to help to start grow and understand one another and have empathy and compassion in ways that we never would, because each of us, it's like we're looking at the world through different lenses, like different color lens. Like I'm wearing purple, Jeff's wearing orange, but we think we're all wearing the same lens. So we get upset with each other. Like, how could you think that way? How dare you? You know, or why would you do that? Well, once you start realizing, oh, wow, we totally see the world and operate in a very different way, then we can take off our lens, even if it's but for a few seconds, and put on someone else's and then have that empathy and compassion and and at least a little bit of an insight of how to come towards one another versus at one another. So that's really how it all started.
How do you guys think it's different than other personality typing systems or whatever? Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah. Well, so a lot of the other systems, and they are great. So we never want people to think, oh, this is it. This is the tool. Put them all the rest down. No. The rest of them are really great, helpful tools to help people to know what they do or their preferences. But this is getting at to why you think, feel, and behave in particular ways. This is the you have core motivations. There's four core motivations that at your Enneagram Coach we teach that are really the pivotal point that what everything hinges on, everything comes from these core motivations of why you think, feel, and behave in particular ways. And that is so insightful because so often on our daily journey in life, we're going along, think we're doing great. And then all of a sudden we land in this pitfall again, and it's a very similar pitfall. And we throw up our hands and get so frustrated or have shame and condemnation and all the things, or we blame shift it onto someone else. And we just kind of wonder, how did I get here again? Well, the Enneagram is going to really help you to understand why, the big reason why you got there. And think of that being like your on a road with a GPS, your current location is your main Enneagram type. And you're traveling down this road and you have a healthiest destination. This is where you are healthy, you're engaged with life, it's an overflow of how God created you to be. But like I said, so often we veer off course. We fall asleep at the wheel, we get distracted, you name it, and then we're in that pit again. You know, and like, how did I get here? So we use the Enneagram to, one, help us to understand not only why we averted, you know, what derailed, but also use it as a rumble strip on the highway. You know, those things on the highway that, you know, alert you when you're veering off course. So the Enneagram can do that because we as humans are going to continually get distracted and veer off course. That's just how it's going to be. But that doesn't mean it has to end up in the ditch. What if we had a tool that alerted us, like, hey, if you keep going that direction, though, I know it feels like that's the right way to go, or it feels natural to you, you're going to end up in that same spot that you've been. Why not try a different way? Though it's harder, because growth is always harder, health is always harder, but why don't you try a different way this way? And that is what we're really trying to teach people.
Yeah, I love
that. So would you say that Enneagram in general is all about motivation? Like someone could look a certain way. You could have like two of the same numbers and they look different, but it's all about the internal motivation.
Yes, that is
well, so good. And we'll get into parenting a little bit later, but there are certain types that will use a particular strategy in parenting, but the reason why they're doing it is radically different.
Wow.
Right, the like doing the like baby wise different. Like militant thing could be two different reasons.
That is serving an interior motivation for them.
Right.
It just happens to be that they're choosing the same tool.
Yeah, because if you were to see two parents using BabyWise, you could easily say, oh, they're, let's say, the perfectionist.
The
you
one
know?
Or the six. Right. I could see the three I could see doing.
Yeah, but that's not necessarily true. I used it because as a nine, I didn't want conflict. I wanted everything to be smooth and easy. And if I can predict how my kid is going to function throughout the day by scheduling, won't that make things more harmonious?
Yeah,
you know? This is the big insight for the Enneagram as it relates to parenting, because it helps us to understand why we choose the tactics that we do as parents.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, we hope that it's going to help us to not wound our kids and pay for their counseling later on in life. That's the hope. But it doesn't do that. But it does help us to understand why do I keep beating my kid over the head with this BabyWise book?
Yeah,
why
right.
can't I just parent my child?
Yeah,
So it's insightful. If you know, as Jesus said to those who have ears, you know, if you want to know these things, the Enneagram answers it.
Yeah.
I will say this in regards to your question of other tools. This is something we've not been able to share yet on any other podcast. So you guys are pretty special.
Thank you.
We go. But there,
John, you actually hear that as a four, by the way.
Yes, that's all I need.
You're very unique.
I'm going to turn my brightness up right now. Okay, go ahead.
So, but we were just talking with a professor at Indiana Wesleyan University who has done a correlation study with students, the Enneagram and correlations with other psychometric tools.
Jeez.
And there were over like 300 different correlations. So your Enneagram type would actually becomes a predictor for how you're going to score on various other tests. So this is not, I mean, I know that in the Enneagram world, it came from a mystic tradition, kind of an oral communal tradition, but research is actually coming now that's showing, no, if you're this type, you're likely going to score these ways on these particular assessments.
That's,
yeah.
So to catch everybody up, basically what this thing is and what was so powerful for me is it's these nine personality types that each of them, I'm going to try to be brief. So there's nine types. They're broken up into three different head, heart, and gut. So you have three that correlate to each of those. You also have time stances that are, some are oriented toward future, present, and past. And so why this is so helpful, and I think why it becomes such a drug, is because it's unbelievably illuminating. And I think to the point that you both are making, Cords, is, you know, you sort of, Beth, as you said, you sort of devoured the book. That's exactly what I did. I felt very seen. I felt very like, oh, I'm a seven. And when I read that, it was like, oh my gosh. Like, all, and I think what was maybe the most sort of cocaine-esque was all of a sudden you feel like you have these reasons for what you do. It's like you've always been like, why do I always think about it? Why am I so obsessed with da da da?
Yeah.
And you start getting into it, and it's just, you can't help but just sort of, you know, because it feels like someone's going like, hey, you ever wondered why you're always thinking about the future? It's because you're future oriented, and you're always planning life around the next thing you're going to do that makes the day worth doing because you have something fun at night or fun the next. And so these things were really powerful, but you know, at the same time, and I'd love to hear you guys speak to this. There's also sort of a slippery slope to this thing, and one of the things
that I was just going to say.
Well, and it's what I am so thankful for the work you guys are doing, especially is it's really easy to sort of take this information because it's so powerful. You know, you read it and you're like, this is me. Like, this thing really gets me. It gets my motivation. It gets my fear. It gets my, how my brain thinks, the speed at which I live my, all those things, and how I relate to others. And you just kind of go, you know, if I just kind of know this, I can sort of know how to be happy, and I can know what I look like in health. Because another thing about the Enneagram that's really fascinating is it tells you what number you're going to look like when you're in a good place and what number you're going to look like in a bad place. So it's also really powerful because, so for me, you know, one is where I go what they call in disintegration or in unhealth. I get really judgmental. I get really perfectionistic. I'm a blame thrower. You know, I'm just kind of like, why are you doing this well? Why is no one making me happy? You know, and so it's great because it's, again, super powerful because you go, oh my gosh, like I'm getting very one-y. You know, mm-hmm. And that means I need to spend some time with the Lord. I need to pray. I need whatever. Yeah. And so I think something I'd love to hear you guys, and I think especially at the beginning of this episode that's really important to me is for people who haven't gotten into it is the sort of the warning shot of, and I think what is so great about what you guys do is it's so biblical and spiritual how you guys approach it. It's not, you know, go in and take this stuff in and then go live your best life. You guys are so good about going, this is a helpful thing. It is not the thing. You know, yeah. So what would be the warning you would sort of give people that haven't done it or find themselves just like neck deep in this stuff?
Oh, well, I mean, you're absolutely right. And that is, if there's anything on this podcast that I want people to listen to is that to not use the Enneagram as a sword or a shield.
Wow.
It is that powerful. It literally is a sword, and whether towards yourself, but mainly, you know, towards others as well is don't use it to condemn, to shame, to belittle, you know, with sarcasm,
stereotype.
Yeah, that's a
big one. Assume or presume that they're doing something for a particular reason.
Right. Because a lot of the other typologies that we were talking about earlier, you know, they're just behaviors that we have, you know, and they're pretty surfacey most of the time. This is getting to the core of who you are or who a person is. And you know how you have those dreams where it's like you're about ready to take a final and you recognize you don't have half your clothes on, you know, and you feel that exposed. That's what the Enneagram is like. But each person, even if you know their main type, if you could only understand the depth and the complexity of the Enneagram, you'll realize that, like, for like you, Dave, you're a 7 and John, you're a 4. There's so much more to it than just that. And it's not just, okay, you're a 7 with a whatever wing and this, you know, subtype and blah, blah, blah. It's not just that, it's your story. You know, it's the story that God has had you go through. And so we want to be very compassionate and understanding. And so we have to realize this is such a sharp two-edged sword that we have to be very careful in how we steward it. But we also don't want to use it as a shield where it's like, well, guys, I'm a 9. Sometimes I procrastinate. You're just going to have to deal with it. Like, and I've heard even someone say that they heard, you know, like a type 5 say, well, because I'm a type 5, I shouldn't go on, you know, and be a missionary. And I'm like, wait, no, that's not how this works. Like, you could be amazing missionary.
Yeah, right.
And so we just really want to recognize, you know, how God has created us, how, what we're like at our very best and how we reflect him, but also where that slippery slope is in our heart and when we start to derail. So for example, how we have set up your Enneagram coach is through our mission statement. And it says that we are here to help people to understand themselves with astonishing clarity so they can break free from self-condemnation, fear, and shame by knowing and experiencing the unconditional love, forgiveness, and freedom in Christ.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Now, the one word you don't hear in there is Enneagram. Wow. The Enneagram is just one of many things that we
beautiful.
Can use.
Right. I love that. I love that.
For that for the purpose of, okay, there are things that we have done in life. We have sin. We have depravity. And yet we're going to experience those things, but we're not supposed to experience them and hold on to them.
Yeah.
The shame, the condemnation, we're supposed to see them and know that Christ has redeemed us in it.
Yeah.
So we can see it and turn immediately to him and know that we can rest in the fullness of who he is for us. And that's what we're trying to do with the Enneagram is, as a seven, Dave, you're going to have times where you're going to slip up and fall, whether it's seven-like stuff, like you were saying, like the type one stuff, so on and so forth. But we don't want to fixate ourselves there. We want to recognize it, own it, apologize, and then move towards, okay, how do I reflect Christ and how does he work in and through me?
Love that. Johnny.
Dave.
It is so hot here in Nashville.
Those temperatures, Dave, just won't stop rising.
Listen, I am doing everything I can, but it is just having no effect on the weather. You know what else won't stop rising?
What?
Life insurance rates.
Oh.
Yep.
Preaching to the choir, Dave.
Hey, I know. The more I put off buying, the more rates just keep going up, John.
Well, listen, you got to try Policy Genius.
Okay.
Have you heard of them?
Yeah.
Well, you've heard of them because Policy Genius makes it so easy to compare quotes from dozens of top insurers all in one place. You can save up to 50% or more on life insurance just by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. That's $1,300 or more per year, Dave.
Listen, John, I'm amazed at a couple things. One, that you know all that, and two, how do they do it?
Well, let me tell you, Policy Genius has licensed experts that work for you, not the insurance companies.
Thank you.
You can trust them to help you navigate every step of the shopping and buying process.
I'm not going to lie to you. I am so interested in this. How do I get started?
Okay, well, here's the thing.
Okay.
First, head to policygenius.com.
Okay.
And in no time at all, you can work out how much coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find the best price for you.
Wait a second. I know where this is going. There's going to be a catch. There's always a catch. What's the catch? Because it sounds too good to be true, Johnny.
Listen, Dave. There isn't a catch.
What?
When you're ready to apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and scheduling for free.
Hey, tell me one more time, how many catches are there?
There's zero catches. Gosh. Just head to policygenius.com to get started right away. Policy Genius. When it comes to insurance,
it's nice to get it right.
You know, sometimes when we have taken personality tools or assessments, maybe they have a particular application to them, like this is my leadership style, or this is something, my team style, my role on the team that I am in work. The Enneagram has this pervasive outlook, like it can apply to all of your relationships, to all of the particular roles that you have in life. And so it has this powerful insight into all the things that we do, but then it can also become an alternative to almost, it can almost become a worldview for people where even for Beth and I, we're like, hey, we're into the Enneagram. We're just not into it that much.
Right.
We're around certain people. It's like, whoa, it's powerful, but that's why our mission statement is set up that way remove the word Enneagram, because there are a lot of great tools out there. This is just one of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I can see how it gets addicting once you first discover it, you know?
Sure.
Because it becomes, like you're saying, Jeff, it's like everyone falls under this, like, somehow this nice little package that once you get into it, it gets more and more complex. But on the surface, you're like, you start discovering, like, oh, I bet she's an eight because I know this other person. You know, it's so easy to fall into that trap where you start numbering people and, you know, in kind of a light, kind of fun way. But I think that the more you get into it, I could see how this could become like your motivation could be to become closer with your spouse or closer with like your friend. But I could also see how it could kind of rob those relationships of intimacy because you feel like you have this shorthand. You feel like you know that other person because of this literature that you have. You know, how do you, I would imagine everyone falls into that trap on some level. Like, how do you counsel people to avoid that?
You know, it hearing you say it that way, it makes me think we need to come up with like the deadly sins of a new Enneagram enthusiast.
Enneagram.
Seriously.
Because it's so common, the patterns that we end up using the Enneagram in relationship to ourselves and to others.
It's like almost like there's certain steps you have to kind of go through until you use it rightly.
You're gonna go through these wrong steps. You're just gonna do it.
Just go ahead and apologize to your spouse because you're going to, one, think that you're horrible and the worst person ever. And then you're going to think, oh,
The worst.
They're the worst.
And why can't they be like me?
Right.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
I think that's so good. And so in our book, Becoming Us, Using the Enneagram to Create a Gospel-Centered Marriage, the first chapter is actually called A Suicide. Because we assume incorrectly other people's thoughts, feelings, and motives, even if you know their type.
Yeah. Yes.
And actually, that can almost be more hurtful.
Mm. I mean, isn't that true, Bethy? So we commit a suicide without the Enneagram, and then we have the Enneagram, and we stereotype and assume again that
because
we understand
you'll do
that
certain
type.
Things. And not that I'm completely wrong in some of the...
I'm the most unique six you've ever met. So...
It's true.
Don't try to pin me down.
But in all seriousness, like, if there are certain things that I do know about you, that if something comes up, let's say you felt blamed and targeted, and then now all alone, I, in the back of my mind, know that that is a big trigger for you.
Hmm.
But if I just say, oh, well, that's because you're, you know, a six and you feel targeted and blamed. So that's what's going on. It's like that robs the relationship of being curious and
that's
listening
great.
And asking. Because even
curiosity is the word.
Right. Because even though
it's not shorthand to the exam, stay curious.
Right.
The book may have words for it, but ask your friend, ask your spouse, ask yourself. How would you say it? Right. What's your word for describing this part of who you are?
Or even just say, hey, could it be that this is what's going on? And if so, could you explain how that's landing on you? Like, so if you did feel targeted and blamed, then how is that landing on you? And why does that kind of spin you out right now? Because they're going to give you so much more clarity. So in some ways, it might kind of give you a little bit of clarity, but it doesn't give you the whole story.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and even if you just, even if you know what the thing is and Enneagram has helped you like name the thing, it still exists.
Yeah.
So it's not the end of it, you know?
Exactly.
And John, I see the piano right next to you and, you know, it's one thing to know about how pianos work. It's another thing to know how to play the piano.
Mm.
And then you've got that piano in that room. Which has its own dynamics to it as an artist. And so that same thing is true of the Enneagram. You may understand how the Enneagram works, but that doesn't mean you're a practitioner.
Yeah.
And even when you're a practitioner, really skillful people know the context of that particular instrument.
Well, even like Jeff, you know, being an executive pastor at many churches, and I was the assistant associate.
It's so interesting when I hear that about Jeff has served multiple churches. Like, that can be spun a variety of different ways. Like, Jeff can't keep a job.
Multiple.
So every time
caps.
I've heard that,
Jeff's
like,
resume is ready to go at any moment.
Yeah, he is burnt out and on the run.
Okay. So, but when I was the administrative assistant at one of the churches, we would have a piano tuner come in. So, John, even though I'm sure you could sit and just go off on that piano, can you tune a piano? You know, so there's so many layers and levels of understanding that instrument. And like Jeff said, the room and all the nuances, but can you take it to that nth degree? And that's
guys, you may see,
we're still learning.
Share that illustration of an instrument. That was a first time thing for us. So that's going to be in our next book.
I was going to say, just a little co-write. If you could just say just a little credit to Dadville, go check out the podcast. It's funny. You know, I have a few type eights in my life. Annie, my wife, is one who's going to get mad that I just outed her. But, you know, they're so different. Like, I've laughed this last week. I've talked to each of them and I've laughed how they're so, so different. Sure, they present in similar ways, but when you get to why they're each doing it, it's very, very different. And I think that's for those who've spent a lot of time with the Enneagram, like you guys have, you realize, and John spoke to this earlier, on the surface, it sort of feels like, oh, eights are this, sevens are that. And sure, and like, on a global 30,000 foot view, sure. But like, you start meeting people who are the same numbers, and man, you can get such different. So it is helpful, but I do think, you know, again, it is a sort of, you have to be careful with that. So here's what I want to do. And I was going to say, how did we find our type? But I think it's more fun if we start with doing the flyover. So it, for those who are listening, kind of going like, oh, this sounds pretty interesting. I wonder what number I am. I would love for you guys to kind of give like a flyover for each number, kind of like, you know, a little bit of a, here's what 1 through 9 are and how they work and motivations, those kind of things.
Well, Bethy, why don't you first, before you go into the motivations for each, why don't you just explain why is it we're a number? People may not understand like that we use a number system for the Enneagram.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of teachers have different names for their, the numbers that correlate with them to give kind of an, you know, one word descriptor of their whole being.
Right.
But that can have positive or negative connotations. And so the numbers really kind of give a neutral stance to it. Now, even though saying that, then people themselves can put a positive or negative spin on the actual number itself, depending on, you know, how they feel. But the numbers,
it's not itself, a ranking order. So right. If you're 10, does it mean that you're perfect?
Yeah, because there's no 10. But yeah, so each of the numbers, and this is so important for people to realize, at their healthiest, each of the numbers are amazing, like truly amazing. Well, people that you would do anything to be around, like you would pay money to be around these people.
Yeah.
But every single number at their worst is literally the worst. You know, I mean, we're talking, you know, personality disorders and all sort of neuroses and stuff like that. So, you know, we just need to realize, and some people will, kind of depending on their preference or the people that have been in their life, they might put certain types of, oh, they're the worst because, you know, but you have to realize there is this range, and most people probably fall in kind of the average range, and then some will kind of be up in the healthier if they've been really working on themselves. And there's definitely going to be some that are in the average to unhealthy range. You're probably not around a ton of really unhealthy personalities, and you'll know. But I think that's so important, because as I read through and kind of talk through each of the types, you know, you will have experienced some of these people's, again, in positive or negative ways, but just hold loosely your beliefs and recognize each type can just be so magnificent. And God created all of us, like we're the body of Christ.
That's right.
And the whole point of the Enneagram is not to see your weaknesses and frailties only. It is to recognize those, own them, and come back to Christ and allow him to work in and through you and who he wants you to become, which is just amazing.
Yeah,
all right.
Great.
So let's dive into 1 through 9, and we're just going to do basically all I'm going to touch on for time's sake is just the core fear and the core desire. But when you're looking to find your main type, you really want to look at the core motivations of all 9 types. And there's 4 of them. So the core fear, what you're running away from. The core desire, what you're trying to obtain. Like, oh man, life will be perfect if I have this. The core weakness, which other teachers will call the passion or the deadly sin. I call it the core weakness because we are weak, but he is strong and his grace is sufficient for us. Wow. And the core weakness really just constantly shows us that we need God in our life. And then the core longing. This is the message your heart longs to hear. And for us, we use that to show everyone that though you're trying to get this core longing met through different means, it's only God who can fully satisfy that. But for time's sake, we're just going to go through the core fear and the core desire. If you want to see all core motivations, just go to yourenneagramcoach.com/core motivations, and there's a free PDF.
That's awesome.
All right. So type one, we call the principled reformer, and their fear is being wrong, evil, corruptible, unredeemable, and being thought of as wrong or bad. Now, what they desire is to have integrity, being good, balanced, accurate, virtuous, and right. So this is a very principled person wanting things to be just the way they need to be, right or wrong, moralistic. The type twos, we call the nurturing supporter, and they fear being rejected, unwanted, being thought of as worthless, needy, inconsequential, dispensable, and unworthy of another person's love. What they desire is to be appreciated, loved, and wanted. Now for them, they're just constantly wanting to serve others others. They feel other people's needs and they move in and confidently insert their help, hoping that others will appreciate them. That appreciation feels like love to them. Now, the type three is the admirable achiever, and they fear being exposed, thought of as incompetent, inefficient, worthless, and also just anyone seeing them as being less than successful. That just is a huge fear for them. Now, they desire to have high status, respect, being admired, successful, and valuable. So for the threes, it's all about image. Now, they could do a lot of things that look like a one, even what is good and right, especially if you're in the Christian sphere. But what you want to recognize is it so that others see it and see an image that is successfully good? Or is it all about morals and principles? So it's a little bit of a different take than the one. So it's all about image. Now, the type four is the introspective individualist, and they fear being inadequate, emotionally cut off, plain, mundane, defective, flawed, and being insignificant. So they don't want someone to shut off their emotions or kind of like, oh, you're being too emotional. They have such a vast wide of emotions, highs and lows. So for them, they desire to be unique, special, different, and their most authentic self, which that's where that kind of that fear of don't cut off my emotions or like listen to them. They have such a beautiful way of expressing themselves. For them, melancholy is, we had a friend calling it the sweet melancholy of the soul. A lot of people take melancholy as depression. That's not it at all. It's this ability to go deep. And if anyone is in sorrow and in grief, the one type that you definitely want to be around is a four, because they can sit with you in for a very long time and nurture you. So for them, that they are the ones that can go deep, but also see the ideal and head for that. The type fives are the analytical investigators, and they fear being annihilated, invaded, not existing, being thought of as incapable or ignorant. And they also fear having too many obligations placed upon them because they have only so much interactive energy reserves that if too many obligations are being placed on them, they fear catastrophic depletion. And so for them, they desire to be capable, competent, insightful, and knowledgeable. So think of the fives. One, they love to hoard information. They have filing cabinets in their brain and they literally store their information, know exactly where it is, so that if you were to ask a random question that they read 5 years ago, they know exactly where to go for that information. For me, yeah, good luck on that one. Yeah. So, but the other things to really recognize about fives is they have like, it's kind of like a cell phone battery. You know, we plug in at night, we wake up, there's 100%. For them, they wake up every day with about 20 to 25% interactive battery life. And so they ration it out. And so if you surprise them, intrude on their time, give them too many obligations, it's like you suck their battery to zero. And the fear for them is, I don't know if I can ever get it back up and going again. And so you're going to feel these very strong boundaries and need to go away like in privacy to recharge. Now, it's more than just being an introvert. So, but I just kind of wanted to give that caveat because a lot of people misunderstand fives. Type sixes are faithful guardians, and they fear itself, being without support, guidance, and security. They also fear being blamed and targeted and definitely physically abandoned. Now, they desire to have security, guidance, and support. Now, a lot of people will think, oh, sixes are, you know, pessimistic. No, they're actually realist. And I'm actually saying that. Jeff, did you hear that? I actually said it. No.
It's about time you got it right.
But so what happens with the sixes, they have this internal committee, this inner committee that is constantly trimming with all the possibilities, positive possibilities and negative possibilities. And they're letting everyone know, including themselves. And so others can take that as being pessimistic, but it's a true gift when used rightly to help people understand what could happen and to rightly kind of align oneself or the group or the family accordingly. Now, type sevens are enthusiast optimists, and they fear being deprived, trapped in emotional pain, limited, bored, and definitely missing out on something fun. So the true FOMOs of the world. And they desire to be happy, fully satisfied, and content. So the sevens, like, Dave, you're saying future oriented. Think of it almost like when we're kids and Christmas is coming, that anticipation of what's going to come. That is like a seven's life. Anticipation is almost the joy of life versus being in the moment. It's actually hard for them to be present in the moment when it's actually happening. Yeah. And then it's kind of a letdown because they built it up so high in their mind that it never lives up to that. So then they feel like, oh, I didn't quite get that full satisfaction. So they're constantly going to the next thing. Now, AIDS are our passionate protectors, and they fear being weak, powerless, harmed, controlled, vulnerable, manipulated, and left at the mercy of injustice. They desire to protect themselves and those in their inner circle. So eights, they are some of the most tender-hearted on the Enneagram, but others don't see it because they put this really strong exterior to protect themselves and others. And so think of their heart almost having like a second, third degree burn, and they're going to put a shield of some sort to protect themselves. And so people usually bump up against this kind of shield, this external strength, and people don't always know what to do, and they can't then feel the softness and the tenderness inside, but they're really the big diesel snowplows in our life that really desire to plow a path for others. But others sometimes feel the plow bumping up against them or plowing over them if they're not healthy. But when they're healthy, they really plow a path for us. And last but not least is my type, the peaceful accommodator. We fear being in any kind of conflict, any kind of tension, feeling shut off and overlooked. We desire harmony, inner stability, and peace of mind. So we're the ones that are going to go along to get along, to make everyone happy, to keep the peace. But in the unfortunate thing is we forget ourselves in the process, and that's the work that we have to do. So there you go. All nine types.
Okay, so I have a few follow-up questions. Could you tell everybody the time orientations, how that works out?
You know, that is just not the one thing that I, because that's Suzanne Stabile. She really dove into that. Yeah. I know some of them, but I haven't known all of them. I know like for the type nine, you actually might know it better than I do. It's not something that I've dove into. It is really helpful though. I know the type nine were past oriented, but what's funny is Jeff always corrects me when I do it because we look at the past and think of all of the positives because the nine, remember, we only want inner stability and peace of mind. So when I look back at an event, I look at all of the positives. It's cozy. It's comfortable. It's nurturing. It's like a hug to me. And he's like, don't you remember A, B, C, and D also? Like these horrible things? Like, oh, yeah, thanks. Now you ruined the moment, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas I know for Jeff as a six, he's present oriented, though some people might think a six would be future oriented because they're thinking of all that could go wrong or good. But really, they use that information for the present moment.
Yeah.
And then Dave, you can speak to yours being.
I think these are there's a couple follow-ups that I want to ask you after this too. These are also helpful things with Beth as you went through the numbers so well that I think will help people too as they're thinking about them. If they're new to this, so there's the few. I'm cheating right now. I want to be really clear. I just looked this up online because I'm like y'all only know a few of these, but they have 3, 7, and 8 are future focused. And so if you're listening and going, I'm not sure which one I'd be, this is a helpful one. I think for a lot of people is like, how much of your time do you think, well, how do you think about time? And I tend to think about what's coming, what's going to happen. You know, so that's the three, as you said, the achievers, the seven, the Epicurean is what I like to call myself. Thank you. And then the eights, which is nice. the bosses basically, are future focused. And then you have 1, 2, and 6 are present as Jeff, you said about yourself. So they're more present focused, living in now, what's happening now. And then past is 4, 5, and 9. And so I think those can really be helpful, which is funny too. I'm remembering now looking at this site that the 3, 7s, and 8s are called aggressive because our energy is more assertive type. And then you have 1, 2, and 6, which are dependent types, or present focus. And then 4, 5, and 9 are withdrawing or past focus. So I think that's helpful.
And for someone who's actually looking to understand the Enneagram as well as find their type, in the last month, we released a brief video series that basically is recorded sessions on helping people to understand the Enneagram and their type. And you can find it at Ennea What, E-N-N-E-A-W-H-A-T. Beth's getting a phone call, so we'll just take a break.
From a spam person.
We'll be right back.
But enneawhat.com, and it will walk you through all the core motivations and help you to understand what your type is.
Yeah.
And I think what Beth is saying is is really important, even as it relates to time. Our motive shapes how we relate to time.
Yep.
And that's the inside of the Enneagram.
Yeah.
It's not that just sevens are future focused.
It's
why they're future focused or how they relate to the future in that way.
Yeah.
Because the seven is future oriented because they want to be fully satisfied and content, but can't find it in the present. So they're constantly, you know, stirring up in their mind what could be the next fun thing.
That's
exactly
right. That's exactly right.
Whereas the eight, you know, like they're all about intensity, like the snowplow. Okay, well, what do I need to plow next? You know, so I can get to that end.
That's
goal.
Really great.
And threes are, it's all about, okay, so what do I need to do, like, to achieve that goal that I have down there?
Right.
And so they're planning accordingly. Yeah. The three won't try something unless they know they'll be successful. So again, they are all in that future oriented mindset.
Yeah.
But why they're doing it. So everything, I'm telling you guys, everything comes down to the core motivations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We did 45 courses, one on each couple type combination. And everything hinges on those core motivations. If you want to know why you guys get into arguments or fights or misunderstandings, that course for you will specifically lay out exactly what it is. It's just at becomingus.com. And it's amazing how once you start to understand how these core motivations function and pop up in a misaligned way.
Yeah.
And then you can apologize and learn how to get it back in an aligned way, a healthy way. And so, go for it.
Well, I was going to say, that's a great little, I was going to ask about this next. Could you speak to the health and, or integration, disintegration, however you define it? Like, can you tell people quickly about how each number has a, you know, way they go?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. So Enneagram, when you look at the symbol, there's a 9-pointed geometric star. That's what it kind of looks like, with a circle around it. And each of the star points, so like if you were to draw out a star, each of those points is one of the Enneagram types, the main types. So 9 sits at the top, and 9 is connected to 6 and 3. And then the other types are connected to different numbers, and you'd have to kind of look at it to see kind of how this all unfolds. But each type is connected to 2 different types. Now, Enneagram kind of 101 says that each type goes in one direction under stress and one direction in health and growth, which is true. Mm-hmm. When we unpack it, what we're helping people to realize is that you actually go to both of those types healthy and unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a little bit deeper teaching and why and how that actually occurs, which is why that when you're kind of doing Enneagram 101, we just do the stress and the growth. Mm-hmm. But we want you to realize, so like Dave, for you as a 7, you, what would typically be laid out in a book is you would go to the type 1, you go down that line, that path. We call this the Enneagram paths. That you would go down that path under stress and take on some of the average to unhealthy qualities of the type 1. Like you said, you might get critical and short. And again, it's the why. Because someone might be keeping you from fun or that next best thing. And so it's not the reason for the type 1 would have, it's the reason the type 7 has.
Right.
But the reason why that's so helpful is now that you know what it's like to go down the path of the want towards the one,
right,
you can start to see this happening maybe in your work or your podcast or your family and kind of own it. Raise your hand, say, oh my gosh, I can totally see I'm being a little critical here and short and judgmental. Will you guys forgive me? And this is what I did. So as a 9, I moved to the average, the unhealthy parts of 6. And Jeff always laughs at me. He's like, get out of my space. You're not really good at this. But like for...
Actually, it's more get out of my neighborhood.
Yeah.
You can't handle it down here.
That's true. That's true. But like, so we're south of Nashville in College Grove. And if we were to leave from here to go to the airport and we're running late, this actually happened to us, and we're running late at 8:00 in the morning, I'm thinking of all the worst case scenarios, all the school stops, you know, or school zones stops, traffic, et cetera. And then I start getting irritable and like upset at every single thing. And, you know, the rest of the family might be chill and I'm just all agitated and worried. And then I realized one day when this is happening, like, hey guys, I'm so sorry. Like, you're not doing anything wrong. I'm just totally anxious. I'm worried that we're not going to make it on time, which of course is like a total normal thing, but that doesn't mean that I have to act out in a way that is, you know, unbecoming of me and uncomfortable for everyone else. So I just said, hey, I am so sorry. I said, honestly, I'm not sure I can stop right now until we get there because I am that worked up, but I'm really going to be mindful and try. And actually, I mean, I would probably say it went down from, let's say, like a level 9 to a level 3, you know, it was still there. I was still anxious, but just the recognition and apologizing, but it also helped the family to go, oh, mom gets it. Like, she's not throwing this on everyone else. This is something she has to work through. So it just brought clarity to the situation. Yeah. So each, and it would take too long to kind of show how each number does this.
Right.
then as a 9, so as a 9, I can go to 6, like I said, in stress and get all worked up about what could happen. But I also need to go to 3. So 3 is the other line I'm connected to. And like I said earlier, 9s, you know, we go along to get along to try to make everyone happy. The problem is then we see what everyone else wants and bring it into ourselves and flood ourselves out. So we don't really know what we think and feel. We're just trying to see what everyone else wants. So as a 9, growing means I go to the healthiest side of 3 and I recognize how God has created me, the gifts I have, and actually move and engage in that. So it's actually promoting myself in a healthy way, not in an arrogant way, but promoting myself and having confidence in accomplishing things. So each type has their stress path and their growth path, but don't forget you use both the highs and the lows. Because for you, Dave, going to the highest part of type 1, which is normally your stress path, it brings you order.
That's right.
Grounds you. It helps you to be principled and it helps you to get things done. So it really is, it's not just one's negative and one's positive.
Right. Dave.
Hey, Jenny.
Man, I can't decide whether to grill chicken breasts or chicken thighs.
This is a classic John dilemma.
Right.
As long as I have known you, this has been a problem for you. And but I want to say I get it because it's a tough decision.
Yeah. You know what? I guess we'll just have to wing it.
Oh, I should have seen the setup.
But seriously, I don't know what to grill this weekend.
Well, I guess you'll have to wing. Oh, you already did that joke. Yeah. ButcherBox is the way to go, okay? It makes getting ready for impromptu summer cookouts so easy, John. Don't overthink it.
It's so hard to find high-quality meat, though. It's frustrating, you know, especially when the selection is always limited and expensive.
Luckily, and listen, this is going to bless you. That's where today's sponsor, ButcherBox, comes in. ButcherBox kicks down the wall, and you know what they tell you?
What?
They say, hey, we make everything high-quality, and it's humanely sourced meat.
All you have to do is sign up, select your box, and they ship it right to your door. Not to someone else's door, they ship it to your door every month. And now, new members will get free bacon for life.
Can we sing
when
that
they
real
sign
quick?
Up?
Free bacon for life.
That was great, John. You practiced that, yeah.
Dave, pinch me. I must be dreaming.
First of all, I don't want to have any violence on this podcast, so I'm not going to do it. But I want to remind you, it's the real deal every month. Double B, as we call them, ButcherBox, ships a curated selection of the best quality meat right to my house.
Okay, let me ask you this, though.
Yeah.
Is it free of antibiotics and hormones?
Take a guess.
I'm guessing yes.
It is.
I knew it.
Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, which was a funk band I was in high school, enough for 24 individual meat.
That's enough to feed an army.
Or my funk band from high school, John, because in Colombia we were considered a small army. So you can even customize your own box. Pick one of theirs. It doesn't matter. Either way, you get exactly what you want. Here's what you got to do. Just go to butcherbox.com/dadville today. Right now, you'll get a pack of free bacon in every box for the life of your subscription.
I'm heading to butcherbox.com/dadville right now.
Get your meat.
Ow, I'm thinking.
But it is, and you know, I bring that up to say, as you're thinking about it, new people are thinking about it going, well, I kind of feel like I'm a few numbers. You can actually get confused because, you know, as a 7, if I take the, if you're taking a test, whatever, if I take it on a day when I'm really like grounded and centered and healthy, I may answer because that for a 7 is a 5. I can go, wow, I may be a 5. And if I'm in a really bad headspace, traditionally, I mean, I agree with you. I think these things are very nuanced because there's really great things about 1. There's really bad things about 5. But as I move toward those two directions, so it's tricky, you know, I can look like a 1, you know, and go, oh, that's weird. So I think, and I was going to ask you, as we talk about those, and I'll say quickly too, for those who are listening, I'm just going to say this really quickly, just move, but another thing that's really fun and fascinating as you're finding your number out or learning more about yours is there's also centers. So there's a body center, a head center, and a heart center. And so the body center is 8, 9, and 1, which means, you know, you sort of think and feel in your gut. You know, my wife, who's an 8, everything is very gut level. It's how, you know, that's how she sort of interprets the world, how she processes, and how, which really fascinates me, how stress can present, you know, is in her body, you know, her gut. So that's 8, 9, and 1. Head center is 7, 6, and 5, which is me, you know, thinking oriented, issues with anxiety resulting in fear. And then you have the heart center, which is 4, 3, and 2, which would be John, feeling oriented, issues with self-image resulting in feelings of shame. So those things can be helpful too. What I was going to ask you guys, which you already spoke to, you know, if you're listening and you guys actually have resources for this, which I think would be good for you to say again at this point, is if you're trying to figure out what you are, what would y'all tell people as they're listening, going, "Oh, I'm kind of curious about this. I think this could help." How do you guys sort of advise people to find what they think their number could be?
Well, you can start by taking our free assessment at yourenneagramcoach.com. It'll be right there at the top of the page. It's free. It's going to take you about 10 minutes, and you'll get immediate results via email. But the other way, usually to help people along the path, we've created a series of very short videos that explain the core motivations and how each type functions. And so you can go to anyawhat.com, and that's going to walk you through the process of finding your type.
And that's free.
And that's free great. As well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And would you say in general, like, you can't, whatever the assessment you're taking, it's that's not the end of it. Like, you can't take one assessment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a both and. I mean, for some, it's very clear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then for others, because you're bringing yourself to this assessment.
Yeah, well said.
The assessment is trying to reflect back to you. But if you're already foggy and you're answering in foggy ways, then the results aren't going to be as clear.
Or if you're like, you know, Dave was just mentioning, if you're under stress, like when we've had seasons of really big stress in our life and I took it then, my type 6 score might pop up a lot higher than what it normally would be. So yeah, that is just and so you want to read the core motivations and really think through that day, that week. Okay, so here's the core motivations of all 9 types. So when I get activated, it's usually easier to kind of see it when you're kind of activated negatively. What's going on? Why did I do this? Or why did I think this? And kind of look at those core motivations. And that really is what helps to you to kind of solidify. It's not the behavior. So don't look at the behaviors of a type. Look at the motivations.
So, and I'll say this too, if you get really stuck, one of my favorite things I heard a teacher tell me once was like, if you're just like, I just can't find it. I've read them all. I feel like I'm all 9. Look at the weaknesses, and the one that you hate the most is usually the one you are.
Yeah.
It's like, if you really can't land it.
For those who will say stuff like that, like, I resonate with all 9 types. Typically there are 9.
Yeah. Typically.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes it's 6. Yeah.
Even your approach to assessments and finding your type oftentimes reveals your type.
Yeah. And 6 is usually will say, well, it depends, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a huge indicator for 6s.
1s and 8s are like, yep, I got it.
Yeah.
And it is really hard. I mean, for those of you who are listening, who haven't done any of this stuff and you go and take any assessment, I mean, don't be swayed by the fact that, like, 5 questions in, you still don't know. You haven't had an easy answer, you know, because it is tough.
Well, Jeff mistyped himself for years. He, so as a type 6, there's a wide range of 6s. They're really the most complex on the Enneagram. And my mom's a 6 and he's a 6. And when he looked at and I said, yeah, my mom's a 6. He's like, I am nothing like your mom. And really, they're like, they look nothing alike.
Right.
My mom is very fear-based, anxious, and operates from that perspective. Jeff looks more like an 8. Like, if you read the 8 descriptions, and that's what's called a counterphobic 6. So, but underneath, the core motivations for my mom and Jeff are the same, but how they deal with it looks very different. So Jeff is like, so he mistyped himself thinking he was an 8, you know, because he didn't understand the Enneagram well enough. And then over time, you know, someone who was well versed in the Enneagram pointed out, I don't think you're an 8. I think you're a 6.
Yeah.
And just so everybody knows, like, I was so upset, I put the Enneagram down for an entire year because I didn't want to be a six.
Well, and that's kind of what the joke this guy told me was, is there is this I mean, you know, my wife will tell you, like, she hates being an eight on bad days. Like, she's like, yes. I don't know anyone that is more frustrated of her number than she is sometimes, you know, because it's like, when you really know yourself and you know your weaknesses, you know, those dark things, you're like, oh my God, I'm the worst, you know? And then, you know, and two, fun fact, I mean, you know, I think they also say that the two hardest numbers in society and especially sort of Western culture are the male two, because it's anti-stereotype. It's a helping, very helpful guy. And then the female eight, which is the very sort of,
well, actually we just did podcast series on misunderstanding types.
Yeah.
So we did sixes, and it was female and male, because sixes, like I said, there's a wide spectrum. Yeah. So we did the that. And then we did female type eights. And man, we got so many comments from eight women who were so thankful. They were like, I'm crying listening to this. Yeah. We've done male type twos, and we're getting ready to do female fives and male fours.
Yeah.
Well, I've never thought about this before, but I mean, are there any, are there numbers that are mostly one gender dominant?
Yeah,
or is it just tougher for, you know, female
eights?
It
would all be anecdotal. Yeah. There's no research that says otherwise. I'm sure we could. I mean, we've had, we just need researchers to help us.
Yeah.
So if you're a researcher, listen to the podcast.
Yeah, because that's true.
Clearly, researchers would be attracted to this kind
of thing. That's our main demographic.
researchers. Engineers. We have a ton of engineers and researchers.
But, you know, we've had over 2 million people take our assessment.
Jeez,
and, and so it would be very fairly, well, we don't keep track of gender, but I you know, I think
it
there
would
is
be
a way
interesting,
of,
yeah.
to see.
Well, but the problem with that too is majority of our audience is female. Anyway, all that to be said is the Enneagram is neutral when it comes to gender. It's the society that puts different stigmas on
very
it.
Well
so
said.
Like in America, let's say a male four could feel out of place because, you know, we're more of like kind of growing up from the 50s, that John Wayne, you know, atmosphere.
Right.
Whereas in Paris, France, a male type four is very well received, you know, so it's really
well
a
said.
Society type mentality.
That's why it's John's French moving in high school.
John's moving to Paris next week. Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, I thought that I was a nine for so long because Dave, I think, Dave, you were the one that introduced me to Enneagram years ago. And I just think I come off as a nine in general. Mm-hmm. And then I was reading Road Back to You and thinking all the while, like, I'm a nine, but so I'm going to start with the nine section. I read the nine section and then I went back to the beginning of the book and I'm reading the whole thing. And when I get to the four, oh my gosh, I mean... Mm-hmm. Dave, like you were saying earlier, like when you read something like that, that is so, I've never had a moment like that in my life where I'm like, I'm reading this book that knows me better than any other human being has known.
It's your brain butter.
It was crazy.
Your brain butter.
Yeah.
Well, and especially John, you know, type fours, you know, feel so misunderstood. And to have a book that literally doesn't know you per se, but yet knows you is, I'm sure, a very wild experience. Very comforting, I'm sure, on some level too.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have, you know, a lot of parents that listen to this podcast and namely dads. As you guys think, I would love to hear y'all's thoughts on this. As you think about how the Enneagram can help, not only we've talked a lot about just in general, but I think especially in parenting, and maybe especially as dads, what are sort of your thoughts around that and how it can be helpful as a parent and namely a dad?
Yeah, the Enneagram is incredibly helpful for parents. Now, the initial inclination is to think this is going to help me to know my child's personality type.
Right.
And to help them.
Fix them.
Which is dangerous, right?
That, well,
when they're young.
I mean, yes and no. And I'll explain a little bit, but there's kind of three ideas of why the Enneagram is going to be so helpful. Number one is this. Who am I? How do I work? Hmm. So I remember, I'm forgetting his name. He wrote the book, The Soul of Shame.
Kurt
Thompson.
Yeah.
And he says the greatest gift that a parent can give to their child is a coherent story, to understand their story. as a parent.
That's so
meaning
good.
Oftentimes, and this is true in marriage, we are reenacting something in our marriage that is getting in the way of us becoming a better married couple.
Wow.
And the same is true of parenting, where we are in some ways reacting out of something of our own childhood and the metaphors and the ideas that shape what we wanted as children. And so if I don't understand that, I'm actually going to place that over my own parenting and over my own child, because my kid's experience is not my experience.
Wow.
Number two is understanding them. Your kids are different than you. I remember we were in a passing conversation with our team, and one of our type 8 staff.
Well, 9 first.
Was it the 9? Oh, the 9. Why don't you go ahead and share?
Yeah. So the type 9 in our group was talking about how her and her husband pray over their kids. And they're both 9s, okay?
Oh, wow.
And so they're praying for empathy and compassion and kindness. And our type 8 chimes in without even being asked, like, really? Wow, I pray that my son is a warrior and that his no.
So, which was very insightful as it relates to, like, your kid is not you. So who am I and who are they? We are different. We perceive, we interpret, we engage with the world in different ways. And it would be wrong, and I've told my kids this, like, I have parented you as a 6. There is now a 6 part of you in your head, and that's me, but that's not you. And learning to differentiate the two of those things actually helps them, particularly in their 20-somethings, where they need to individuate. They need to separate from mom and dad for their own identity.
That doesn't mean, because I think a lot of parents are like, oh, well, then I need to learn their number and parent them from their perspective, not mine. Like, no, God gave you your children. You know, I'm a 9, Jeff's a 6. He gave Nate and Libby to a 9 and a 6 parent couple type.
On purpose.
For a reason.
Well, and to realize, and this is where the Enneagram is helpful so far as it helps you to ask different questions with your kids to get to know them. Where it's not helpful is because of development of their own psychology and their own sense of identity, it's going to be really hard for you to figure out their type. If not impossible, because that may change. Your family, I mean, like, if you think of families on an inner tube, everybody has a place, and if anybody moves, everybody moves. And so your child has a role in your family. And so sometimes that role is given by the married parents, or the amount or size of the family and other children. And so recognize that there are so many layers, it would be difficult for a child to be self-referential and to have the vocabulary to say who are they, particularly in an Enneagram conversation.
Right.
And then the next one is, who are we? So who am I, who are you, and who are we?
Wow.
There is a particular dynamic that happens with children. Now, we don't promote favoritism with children, but it's very common to families. Like, there are some kids that you can get along with easier than others. And that can be answered by Enneagram type. And so to understand that just because I have this great relationship that feels easy, we understand each other with one child, doesn't mean that I should have it with the other, with another child. And the Enneagram helps to explain the differences between the two and to give you language so that you can actually talk with one another about those dynamics.
Yeah, that's great. And then I guess sort of in conclusion with this, because this is kind of a hotly contested thing in this Enneagram space, because I've heard two different thoughts about it that contradict each other. What are y'all's? Because I think one of the things that's really tricky is when you start learning it. And let me say this first. Sorry, Jeff. I think what you've just said, if there's a theme that I think we have found on this podcast that is unbelievably consistent, is with experts who have come on, you know, if that's psychologists, therapists, authors who have written books about these things and actually have a lot of knowledge, it is one of the most important things that they feel is to know your story. It's unbelievable how consistent that theme is. That as we have people on, they say one of the best things you can do for your kid is to first know your own story and how that's going to impact them. So it's, I always love simpatico. So it's fun to hear you echo that.
And
also
to realize how much of that you are projecting on your kids.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. 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 That's great. So one, I love that. I love when we have those moments where it's where that's true. But, I think the other thing I was going to ask, and again, is sort of, bringing this whole thing together. I think one of the things that's tricky is as you learn and you sort of go, oh, okay, I know my number and I kind of know my story and my wife or, you know, my spouse, whoever, we kind of know their story. And now the kids, and you, yes, just sort of, the eye of Sauron rests on your children and you're just like, oh, he laughed that way. Probably a 7. Oh, he really likes details. Probably 1. And you know, they're like 5. You know,
right,
so,
exactly.
You know, what are y'all sort of, because it's the easiest, gosh, as a parent, it is the lowest, most dangerous hanging fruit,
yes,
you know, to do that. What are y'all's thoughts around that, sort of typing your kids or trying to figure them out? And how do you think
And when
that?
Did you guys do it?
Yeah.
What was your personal?
Like we said, we started learning about the Enneagram in 2001. That means our daughter was 1 year old and our son was 3. So we literally have been using the Enneagram since they were infants. And of course, just like everyone else, like what's the manual on this,
yes,
child?
Right. Yes.
Like someone just give me the instruction
well
manual.
Said. Really well said.
Then I can figure it out and I can make sure they're going to be healthy adults. But I also knew it had to do with the core motivations. And how do you know someone else's core motivations? You don't. Like they have to tell you. So I would say be a great student of your kids, and you could easily probably take a couple numbers off the plate. You might recognize, I don't see characteristics of, like for instance, our son, I didn't see much 8. I didn't see 5, and I didn't see as much like 3, you know, or 4. So you know, there's a couple numbers I was like, safely, I could kind of take those off. But then I just held the rest of them loosely. And I remember when he was 9 years old. So here, you know, I was into it for several years at that point, and he was helping someone. And I felt like 1, 2, and 6 were his top possible numbers. So I was like, okay, Nate, so did you help that kid because it was the right thing to do, the helpful thing to do, or the loyal thing to do? And he looked at me like, yeah, like all of them. And I'm like, dang it, tell me what you are. But here's the thing is, as kids, even though we do believe that they're born a type, so they're born with the lens that they are going to see, interpret, and react to the world through, they are absorbing so much from everyone else, their parents, their teachers, their friends. So that doesn't mean that they're not that type, but they're trying on so much other things.
Yeah, well said.
That you can't fully assess why they're doing it because they can't explain it yet. So just being a good student of your kid is important. So Nate was about 14 and our kids are both like old souls. So that's probably around somewhat the earliest that your kid's going to fully start to understand why they do what they do. And so we had him take one of the tests and just to see what he'd come up as. And at that time I was landing a little bit more in 6 and the test showed that. And I said, well, read that and read the 1, read the 2. And he was like, oh, totally, I'm a 6. And he gave all the reasons. And then our daughter, though, and what was interesting is I thought she was probably a 9 with an 8 wing like me versus a possible 2. And when she was at that age, you know, she took the test and she came out as a 2. And I'm like, really? You know, kind of like, and here I've been in it for at least 12 years or a decade. And and she's like, oh, I'm totally a 2. And I'm like, really? But here's the thing, as a 2, she's the compliant type, the dutiful type, that she was trying to do a lot of mom looking stuff, a lot of 9 like stuff, because she wanted to be kind of like the teacher's pet, the parent pet. That's what 2s do. Like, if I can serve and help and be what you want, then you'll love me, right? Mm. I can help. Mm-hmm. And so she was doing a lot of 9 like stuff. But then it was interesting, as she became more of a teenager, that 2 like stuff came out more and more. And I was like, oh my goodness. So parents, a lot of times what happens is kids will act kind of one way and then they get in those teenage years. And like Jeff said, they start to differentiate themselves and they start acting different and parents start freaking out like, you're not who you used to be. And it's like, well, I think their personality is just coming to the forefront. And it's kind of like a toddler trying to learn to walk. You know, it's not always pretty, but they're really trying to be who they are. And that's where we need to not panic. We need to have a non-anxious presence and be very open and receptive and asking curious questions. Okay, so why did that land on you that way? Or what are you feeling? Or why do you think you did that? And to be more receptive, not in the sense that we can't train them and discipline them and do all those great things. But are we curious about their story?
Yeah.
And so it's mainly in the teenage years into the 20s that would be more beneficial for them to land on their type than anywhere earlier. Now, that doesn't mean you can't explain the Enneagram and help them to know that there are nine types and kind of giving them a frame of reference. And the more Jeff and I would talk about our emotional internal world, and like I said earlier, like, hey guys, I'm acting this way, I'm sorry, I totally reckon. The more we did that, the more kids were able to do that, because we were showing them, we were being an example for them.
And just to turn this from a different perspective, think of how hard it is when your spouse comes to you and says, why did you do that? I don't know why I did it. I just did it. That's just what I do. So let's give our kids a break that maybe they don't understand themselves either.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and also when your mom or your dad comes and says, why did you do that? That's a loaded situation right there. To
yeah, you're right.
Sure
yeah,
it is.
That's a danger zone.
Well, why are you asking me?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Here's the thing. The Enneagram and parenting literally brings us to our knees. Really, it is all about depending on him to give us insights, to help us to grow, and then to impart that to our kids the best we can.
Yeah. And you know, just to reinforce that warning, I think, and you guys just said this so well, and it really means a lot to me to hear you say this, because I think it's such a beautiful idea, is the staying curious, because I think the danger that I can feel even at the kids being 9, 7, and 4 is once I figure them out, I've got the manual and now I know what to do. And now I can sort of parent, and it makes my life easier. Just to be honest, I don't have to, I don't have to stay curious. It's exactly y'all's point.
Yeah.
And I think the danger, and I've kind of seen this a couple times where somebody will mistype a kid and for a few years be like, well, he's my little 2. And that's why. And then all of a sudden they pop up and they're like, oh my goodness, I was wrong. And I sort of treated my child this way that didn't really help this scenario a lot. And so I do think you have to have, you know, some fear and trepidation as you sort of approach that space, because you just don't want to get,
you
know. I
will say it's parents that do that, that typically they're actually really wrong. They're so, I mean, like Jeff would have looked like an 8 as a child. But he wasn't. And so if you would have treated him as an 8, that could have been actually more damaging. So you really want to just be very curious as parents.
Let me land this thing by giving a plug one more time. I think if you're listening and you're going, man, this sounds really cool. I'm definitely curious. I'll tell you, for me, the two ways that it's probably helped me the most, amongst many things. And one of the reasons I think you should check out all things McCord and what you guys are doing with, it's so great. You guys have so much information and help online. So all the websites you guys have mentioned, I would encourage everybody to listen to. But I think the thing that I've found has been so helpful is one, in relationships. And I would say, namely, my marriage. I think, you know, as you guys have, referenced, and I mean, what's, you know, so fun is that you actually have, you know, a book with Becoming Us that addresses this exactly. But it was the reason that I took the nosedive into it was, you know, Annie and I being a 7 and 8, we're just having some pretty foundational differences that we couldn't, there were so many fights we got in that we were both like, what happened? How are we this mad? You know, like I said one thing and the next thing you know, we're at this place. And, you know, this buddy said, you should check out this thing. And so I started reading about me. I started reading about Annie and I was like, oh my gosh. It literally would say, you're going to get into fights because of these things. And I was like, I said that last night. I said that exact same thing, you know? Yep. And so it was this. And so I think if you're listening, one, I would say it's just a really, and just with relationships, with parents, with siblings, with friends, you know, a little more of an understanding of like, why is there this disconnect with me and this guy friend? Why is there with my sister? Why is this hard? Or why is it so easy with these people? Like, why do I find? So I think that's something that if you're listening is really helpful. And I would say too, you guys spoke so succinctly and well too, as parents, it's just kind of this idea of like, we're just going to do a better job caring for our kids when we know why we do things, you know. And I told some friends a story the other day. We took a vacation. I'm not going to say where, because it's going to throw this place under the bus. But we took a vacation to this place that will not be named. And we were there about a day. And I was just starting to get a little jittery. And so we went to bed that night. We woke up the next day. we spent about half a day out wandering in this place, and I got home, and it's the closest I've ever had to an anxiety attack. Like, I was absolutely frantic. Like, it was like, and so I sat down with Annie and I said, listen, I think I may need to rent a car and go home. And she was like, oh, you're not joking. And I said, no, I'm about to go crazy. And she said, well, can you tell me why? And I said this out loud. I said, I feel trapped and I can't get out of here. And she was, and it was all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, that's my thing. When I'm trapped in emotional pain, and I didn't have any escape. None of my little tricks worked. I couldn't do anything to sort of like, and so she was so great. She said, listen, we'll go get a good meal, like a healthy meal, because this place we were, that was hard to find. And then she said, and then we're doing this thing tomorrow that'll be really fun. And she was right. And she was like, and I was like, oh, my little seven brain was like, oh, that's a fun thing. Yes. Okay, I can sort of anchor in there a little bit. It gives me a little more stability. Yes. But it was so funny because I felt bad for my kids because they were getting this bad version of me that was very frantic and short and very self-centric. And the minute I was able to slow myself down and go, oh, I know what I'm doing. I'm doing my thing. I'm doing my seven thing where I'm getting really bitey and aggressive because I feel trapped. And that's one of my fears, is to be where I can't get out. And so I think, you know, as a parent, it can be really powerful too, because exactly to Jeff's point, you know, you can start going, why do I always do this in this scenario? Isn't that funny that when I'm presenting, my kids want me to do this with them, I always get snippy, or I love doing these things with them. Why is that? You know? And so I think it can be a really powerful tool to not only help in your marriage and your friendships.
Well, Dave, just think about that for a moment. Don't we all long for parents who are not just great parents, but whenever they get spun out, can actually explain what's happened?
Yeah, that's a great one.
And get realigned. So not only was it just your own understanding, but to be able to pivot and to explain and interpret for them what's happened is a tremendous gift. I mean, just returning like, hey guys, I'm so sorry. I was getting really anxious and your mom was really helpful. And think about that as a memory for your kids. Like, oh, I'm going to look for a spouse who's going to help me to organize my interior world. That's how mom and dad always did it.
Well, that's great.
So we have done that a lot in front of the kids, and to the point where, so the core longing for the type nine is to hear your presence matters. So the nine things that are presence doesn't matter, that we're not important, no one's going to listen to us, so we just go along to get along. Well, we've talked about similar things in front of the kids, you know, when I get activated or sad or pull away, withdraw. And so when they were, I think, like, let's say 18, 19 or whatever, in the summer, you know, I would go upstairs and work and they would be downstairs and watching TV, YouTube, who knows what they're doing, you know, this summer. And so I would come downstairs and I'd see all the dirty dishes. I'm like, hey guys, can you just, you know, clean the kitchen, do all that. I'm going to go upstairs and work. Yeah. Okay. So I go upstairs, 5 hours later, come, you know, downstairs and it's like still the same and they're still in front of the TV. Now, each of the types could see it from a different, or react from it from a different perspective. Now, all of us as parents can go, oh yeah, that would drive me crazy. But why? It drove me crazy because as a nine, I felt overlooked. I didn't feel heard and I felt like my presence didn't matter. And so I was definitely frustrated and upset, and I'm not even thinking necessarily why at the moment. And my kids came in, they're like, mom, you're totally right. We're so sorry. You know, that's our bad. And then they were able to say, I know that what we did makes you feel like your presence doesn't matter, but that's actually not how we think. You're very valuable to us.
Wow.
And we messed up. And so by doing that as parents with one another, Jeff and I doing it with one another, and also communicating our stuff to our kids, not obviously, you know, within, you know, a healthy framework, you don't want to reveal everything.
Right.
Our kids were able to then reflect back to me, mom, I know why this would hurt you specifically. And that wasn't our heart's intent. Now they could have been, that's their intent, you know, but I'm just saying in this one moment, they were able to nuance that. And that's really the goal that we want with each of us, is to be able to come alongside and say, I'm so sorry. I can see why this would have affected you. I didn't mean to, you know, but you're right. That is totally what happened. And it just validates what's going on within each of us.
That's a great application for the Enneagram, you know, like the other extreme of that is my fear, is like people trying to figure out, like, when I'm spinning out, like Dave, you were saying on the vacation, when I'm in that moment, for people to kind of like write it off, because they're like, well, I understand what's happening here. Based on the Enneagram, I get this, and that's your problem. But like the way that your kids used it, saying like, we know that this is how this scenario made you feel, knowing your type, and saying that's not true. Your presence is valid, all that kind of stuff. That's so great.
That is amazing. That's really great. Yeah. So we always ask, first of all, thank y'all for doing this. This is like,
this is so fascinating. This is
a very valuable tutorial. We always ask two questions at the end that we'd love each of y'all to answer. I'll ask you the first one. What is the one thing you want your kids to know?
We both look at each other. What do you
know? That was beautiful. That was such a sweet little marital moment.
I mean, for me, it really does come back to our mission statement. I want them to know the unconditional love, forgiveness, and freedom in Christ so much that when they mess up and they experience shame and guilt and self-condemnation or others' condemnation, that they always know they can go back to their good shepherd, that it's been done. The work is finished, and he is always holding and embracing them from a place of compassion and care and tenderness, and willing to help them to grow. Like, it doesn't mean, oh, it's okay, keep going. It's, yeah, we have a long ways to go here on earth, and that will come when we are with him again, the culmination of all things. But on this side of heaven, that they are safe and secure in his finished work and love. That's my ultimate.
Yeah, that's
for them.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just thinking of our conversation that we were having with our daughter yesterday over lunch, and it really was about the gospel and compassion. That, hey, you're going to be making some decisions as a young adult, and you're going to blow it. But I want you to know that you can always come home. You're always safe. And that is we are able to extend that kind of grace and safety because we have experienced that kind of grace and safety in our spiritual lives. And so we regularly, even now, just as an act of self-care, regularly go to counseling to get disrupted. Why? Because there's new areas of our heart where we get to experience the grace of God.
Yeah, I love that. Oh. I love that you said to get disrupted. That's so true and helpful. Yeah. these Enneagram grooves we get in, where it's like, this is what I do. And they're like, you don't have to. Yeah.
Okay, so what do you want your kids to say at your funeral? God forbid both of you pass away at the same time, saving children.
Actually, that would actually be better.
Yeah,
we don't want to live without one another.
That's we became adults together, so we don't have a choice. I'm just going to die at the same time.
I think I would just ultimately want them to say, you know, when I think of mom, I think of her in all of the highs and lows, resting securely in Christ. You know, just that she knew not only who she was, but whose she was. That's what I'd want them to say.
Yeah.
Would you?
The one thing that I remember early on with an exercise like this, I wanted to end my life well, having loved well. That my kids would simply, I've recently purged my library, but I was upwards of 3,000 books in my library, and then I've got 4 or 5 different certifications plus an MDiv, and so there's a lot of knowledge, there's a lot of insight that I have that is available to my kids, but without love, it's like a clinging cymbal. So despite me being their father, if they were loved well by me, my heart can be at rest.
I love that.
And to be honest, I'll add one other thing. That even means when I make mistakes. My kids know if I have screwed up that they're going to get an apology.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. I love that. So would you tell the people one more time where they can find all of the information they need from y'all?
Yeah, the best place to go is to enneawhat.com. That's going to give you links to our assessment. It's also going to give you some short tutorials on how to find your type and a summary of all the types. But if you want to find out anything about your Enneagram coach, just look us up on any social platform and we're out there.
Great. That's awesome. Great. Thank you, guys. Dadville.